You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Life on Earth is full of surprises. One peaceful day, 66 million years ago, in a climate quite like our own, an asteroid crashed into what we now call the Gulf of Mexico. Nothing has been the same since. New science published this summer in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences has shed light on this mysterious catastrophe. To see what we can learn, I've reached the lead author, Dr. Charles G. Bardeen. He's a project scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. Charles, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
I think this paper contains a lot of useful science about our atmosphere and unexpected climate detours. Charles, what hit the Earth millions of years ago?
Well, what we've seen in the ocean is a crater that's about 100 kilometers in diameter, and that suggests an asteroid of about 10 kilometers in diameter. And it was likely composed of a rocky material, but it could have been iron.
And we have no idea where it came from. I mean, it just came from space one day.
Correct.
And what happened in the first couple of days after it hit?
So when it first hit, it would have created very high pressures at the surface that would have vaporized both the asteroid itself and the material at the surface. So you would have had vaporized rock. You would have created gases like CO2 and water vapor. Some of this, you would also have pulverized rock from the impact, so you would have had rock debris and water being splashed over large areas, as well as going up into the atmosphere. The vaporized material would travel all around the Earth, and as it comes back in, it would have cooled and formed particles that we call spherules that we can see in the sedimentary record. These small rocky particles, as they enter the atmosphere, would have gotten very hot, and that heat would have broiled animals that were at the surface and would have started large wildfires, global or near global scale wildfires. And those wildfires would have put soot into the atmosphere, high up into the atmosphere. The impact of the asteroid would also have triggered tsunamis, large waves propagating away from the origin of the impact. It could have also triggered earthquakes and could have triggered volcanic eruptions, and the volcanic eruptions could have put more gases into the atmosphere.
So what tools did you use to estimate the rapid changes to the atmosphere in such a short period, many millions of years ago?
So the main tool that we used is a climate model, the Community Earth System Model, which is a model here at NCAR. That's a model that we use to study climate change, and we adapted that model to handle the large changes that came along with this event.
And so you got some of the input from geologic changes that we can actually find in the record of the rocks.
That's correct. So the main thing that we wanted to include in the model was the soot from the forest fires, because that's a particle that is very strongly absorbing, and of the things that might have been injected into the atmosphere, like the sulfate aerosols or dust, the soot would have had the strongest effect. And that is something that we have an estimate from the sedimentary record. So our colleagues, Wolbach and all, they dug into the sediments dated back to that time period and did microscopic analysis to look at how much soot was in that layer and estimated the size of the particles that were in that layer. And some of these particles were very small size that could have stayed in the atmosphere for a prolonged period. And so those were the particles that it was important for us to include in our model. And they had estimates ranging from 15,000 to 30,000 teragrams.
Which is just a gigantic amount of carbon and soot. I mean, it's unimaginable how much went up there.
That's correct.
And that darkened the sun.
It did. And because soot is very absorbing of sunlight, that heated the atmosphere where that soot was located and caused that soot to rise up into the stratosphere. And that's a part of the atmosphere that is outside of our normal weather. And so particles there can remain for a long period of time before they fall out. And so that's what we wanted to do in our model, was to see how long that would last, what effect that would have on both the surface and the chemistry in the upper atmosphere.
Were plants able to survive down on the Earth's surface during the period that soot was up there?
Plants on land would likely have been burned by the global fires, and then the darkness was sufficient to stop photosynthesis. So it's unlikely that plants would have regrown quickly from seed or from root if they had survived the fires. Likewise, in the ocean, without any sunlight, plants aren't going to grow, and so phytoplankton would have suffered, and that would have been catastrophic for the food chain in the ocean.
So how long did the Earth stay in that darkness before photosynthesis could start up again?
Our estimates are just under 2 years, about 18 months, 19 months.
Wow. Okay, so this asteroid hit is classified then as a mass extinction event, I presume?
Yes, this is one of the five mass extinction events, and it's the one that's most recent historically, so that's the one that we have the most evidence about.
So tell us about the changes to the ozone layer after this asteroid struck and about the ultraviolet rays.
So because this soot went into the stratosphere, that's where our protective ozone layer resides, it heated up the stratosphere, and that heating caused an increase in a chemical reaction that destroys ozone. In addition, the tropopause, the boundary between the troposphere, the lower part of the atmosphere, and the stratosphere, got warm, and water that normally would not go into the stratosphere ended up making it into the stratosphere, making the stratosphere very wet, and that created more what we call HOX, which has a catalytic reaction that also destroys ozone. So there were two mechanisms to destroy ozone, and so ozone levels got very low, equivalent to a global ozone hole. However, this didn't cause immediate problems at the surface in terms of UV radiation because we also had the soot in the atmosphere at the same time. So while we weren't protected at the surface from UV by ozone, we were protected at the surface by soot. But as that soot fell out, it took longer for the ozone to recover. And so there was a period of about 2 years where we experienced very high ultraviolet at the surface, and that would have lasted for about 2 years and would have been about three times the normal amount of UV radiation at the surface. And there was a paper by a colleague, Betty Piarazzo, who used this type of model looking at an ocean impact of a 1 kilometer asteroid. And then we did a 1 kilometer impact on land. You don't get enough soot there to block photosynthesis, but you do get cooling about 4 Kelvin in the case of the 1 kilometer impact on land. And then you get much more extreme UV from both of those cases because you don't have as much soot blocking, or in the water impact, you don't have soot at all, but you still destroy the ozone.
Did I hear that the stratosphere is getting wetter now or is cooling now? What's the status of it?
Yeah, so global warming implies that you also have a cooling in the stratosphere.
Why?
The CO2 that goes into the atmosphere is a greenhouse gas, so it traps radiation at the surface, but it also in the upper atmosphere radiates to space, so it can cool the upper atmosphere.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, you've also studied the effects of volcanic activity on the upper atmosphere. Have volcanic emissions been steady over the last 100 years?
I personally haven't actually done studies with volcanoes, but volcanoes are a variable source of sulfates into the, or SO2 into the atmosphere that form sulfate aerosols. So you have periods with big eruptions, and then recently we've had periods where we haven't had large eruptions, but we have had small eruptions that have put significant amounts of SO2 into the atmosphere.
So in a way, this latest paper that we're talking about is a good news, bad news story. I mean, the good news is that when almost everything above water burned in a fireball and the sun went out for a couple of years, life did survive and it came back to thrive, although different forms of life. But the bad news is that an asteroid could strike Earth again. I know the moon and many planets are pockmarked with strikes from outer space. Isn't it always possible we could get hit again?
It is possible, and so NASA has a program to try to monitor for that, to look for some of these big asteroids and understand what their trajectories are. And so we don't know of any that would intersect with the Earth. We had one called Florence that just went by a few days ago that is about half the size of what we think hit in the Yucatan. And half the size means eighth of the energy. So that wouldn't have been sufficient to have caused global fires in the same amount of destruction, extinction that we saw in our simulations.
Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest Charles Bardeen, the atmospheric scientist from the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado. Your work reminds me of other science about massive dust after a nuclear war. Do you think there's a relationship or lessons to be learned there?
Yeah, the same kind of modeling framework that we used for this study has also been used to look at what might happen after a nuclear war. And it's the fires from the nuclear war that would put soot into the atmosphere, just like the asteroid would put soot into the atmosphere. The amounts of soot would be far less. So one study looked at a regional nuclear war, say like an India-Pakistan type of exchange, and that's 5 teragrams of soot. But it still had global consequences, not to the extent that we saw in our study. The surface cooling there was more like 1 degree instead of 15 degrees of cooling, and it wouldn't have put enough soot in the atmosphere to block photosynthesis. But it could have affected the length of growing seasons and caused famine and other serious problems. There's also been studies that have looked at larger amounts, between 50 and 150 teragrams of soot that you might get from a global nuclear war. So that would be something like a U.S.-Russia event. And there you would get cooling of about 4 degrees to maybe 8 degrees for the 150 teragram event. And so those would have increased stress on our ability to grow food.
Now, it's my limited understanding, I'm not a scientist, that the weather happens in the troposphere lower down and doesn't really affect the stratosphere. But I'm wondering, I mean, Hurricane Irma was so large it shook the Earth, it showed up on seismic monitors. Can a major weather system influence the stratosphere, or is there a limit to that near-term weather disturbance?
Yes, weather can affect the upper atmosphere. Large fires can put soot into the stratosphere. Something like one of these hurricanes can put water vapor into the upper atmosphere and can also cause dynamical disturbances in the upper atmosphere.
So what got you into studying the mysteries of the atmosphere?
Well, I was a software engineer for about 20 years and decided I wanted a new challenge that was more rewarding and went back to school and got my PhD and got involved in climate modeling. This project was one of those interesting events to study.
Where do you see your research going next?
Well, we're interested in taking this back to the Cretaceous time period. So the model that we used was set up for present-day conditions because it takes more work to get a model set up for the Cretaceous. You have to run the ocean for hundreds or a thousand years to get it initialized to those conditions. But I have colleagues that I'm working with who have such a model, and we're going to combine these together so that we can get a more accurate understanding of what would have happened in various locales. So where people have fossil records, we can get a better estimate of what the temperatures would have been like in those areas. And then I'm also going to be getting involved in some nuclear winter studies where we're going to use this type of a model to understand both the small-scale regional wars and the large-scale wars and trying to understand what those impacts could be so we can inform policymakers of the risks involved.
I'll be looking forward to that work. From the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, we've been talking with atmospheric scientist Charles G. Bardeen. He's the lead author of a new paper in PNAS titled On Transient Climate Change at the Cretaceous-Paleogene Boundary Due to Atmospheric Soot Injections. You can find helpful links about this discussion in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Charles, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us on Radio EcoShock.
You're very welcome.
I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.